KMUN Astoria 91.9, KTCB Tillamook 89.5, and coastradio.org, wherever you are in the world. St. Margaret's Bay, perhaps. What a beautiful place. Or anywhere. Love to know if you're out there listening. It is 2:59. It is time for Arts Live and Local right here in the Columbia Pacific region, where it's 55 degrees. Oh, my goodness. And sorry about the snow in New York City. Really, I am. It is raining here, if that makes you feel any better. There you go. Stay tuned, because my first guest is actually featured in this week's Coast Weekend. But first, hold on. I got it written down, so I'll get it right. Here it is. Well, it's not really written. It's computer written. I am going to wish you all Kong He Fa Choi, Chok Mong Nam Moi, and Losar Tashi Dele. Y'all know what that is, I'm sure. Have a listen, do stay tuned, and in case you missed it, a good new year to you all.
ฉันจะขอได้ยิ้มจากตันสิเบงละจิตพาตันสิพอเบงกาซำขอหันบนห้องยกโซโอมอนังยกยันไม่ให้หอยโอชัน ยกกี่เสียงสีจีจีนานเข้าใต้ส้นแม่ยาน待月西霜下，迎風湖畔開，忽長花影動。 啊，疑是玉人來。
So, if you are understood what that meant, please give us a call and let us know. We would be happy to know. I hate playing things on the air that I don't understand, but it comes from the Rough Guide album, Ancient Traditions to Beijing Pump. From China. And I do really trust and appreciate the Rough Guide label. They do a good job. My notes tell me that it's opera. Maybe. Okay. Well, I'm not going to give you opera now, because I have Edward James here in the studio with me. Hi, Edward.
Hello, Kara.
I have Edward on the other side of the table. And Edward's every Wednesday afternoon on this side of the board. But now he's wearing a different hat as the director of the ongoing play, Dead Guilty. It's at the Coaster. And I mentioned it is written up in the Coast Weekend, in case we don't get to say everything you want to know. Of course, here you're getting it from the horse's mouth. Well, you don't mind my calling you a horse, do you, Edward?
Mr. Ed.
Oh, I never never thought of that. Oh,
many
my.
Years, many oh, years.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. Oh, dear. That's very funny. So I read the term a psychological revenge thriller. Oh. Does that suit this or what?
Yeah, it does. It's a really hard play to describe because it's hard to describe it without spoiling it.
Yeah.
Lots of mysteries and thrillers are.
Mm-hmm. So it's let's just give people the logistics so they can be sure to see it for themselves. But it already opened last weekend.
Last week.
And it's running through February 20th. There is one Sunday matinee coming up this weekend.
This week, during the Super Bowl, for all those who want to skip the Super Bowl.
What a great idea.
There's something to do.
What a great idea. And get some soup and go see a play. It's Friday and Saturday at 7:30 and Sunday at 3 p.m. You know, Edward, I didn't even know it was the Super Bowl this weekend, so that's how... You know,
I don't know why they. Well, they probably didn't even think about that when they scheduled it. However, Sunday is going to be nice weather on the coast,
mm-hmm.
So it's a good time to go down to Cannon
Beach. Spend
the day
in Cannon Beach and Coaster Theater. If you haven't been there, is a wonderful theater. Seats about, I think, 200.
200,
and every seat is good. So you can some of us regulars have our favorites, but still it's
it is a wonderful venue. It's really nice
acoustics
to go down
are
there
good
and work.
And it's pleasant and
both
visibility.
For the actors too. It's just a real nice
interesting, yeah.
Audience there. Relationship. It's
that's true.
The front row is a little bit away from you, but it's like they're in your living room.
It is because it's not a stage up high stage. It's on the same level. And I agree. And there have been times, it won't happen this weekend, but there have been times when it's a small audience. And it really is quite a treat because you really are just tight in there.
January and February is kind of the slow time in the theater everywhere.
But around here, for some reason, maybe because everybody thought it was the slow time for entertainment, everybody's doing theater now. Yesterday, Wednesday and Thursday, was the end of the Reader's Theater here at the McTavish Room, and a couple of white chicks and around talking. And then this weekend, Friday and Saturday night, are the last weekend for Waiting for Godot at the Performing Arts Center on 16th and Franklin. And now the Coaster... Dead Guilty. The name alone makes me a little uncomfortable. So what can you tell us about this play?
It's a play written by the playwright Richard Harris, not the actor Richard Harris.
Richard Harris
wrote numerous thrillers over the years. And The Business of Murder is the name of one. There is a rumbling...
I hope that's furniture and not
outside.
Thunder. I don't know.
No, I don't think it's thunder.
Okay. I know. It came through my earphones even. Okay.
Anyway, Richard Harris has written numerous things. And I really came as we worked on this to respect his writing. It's really good. I mean, I spend my life with scripts, and I see lots of scripts where the writing's careless or unnecessary or overweight or... Mm-hmm. But this guy is really, really good. It's a really difficult play. It's about two women, basically. One woman who's been injured in an automobile accident with another woman's husband on a business trip. And the widow wants to get to know something about what happened that night. And... The young woman invites the older woman into her life, and they form a relationship, which eventually becomes the older woman nursing the younger woman,
who was hurt in the accident,
and she establishes herself in the young woman's life, and the young woman just can't get rid of her. So it's a great piece for two actresses, and I have a couple dynamite actresses.
Who is playing that?
Diane Borsakowski. Do you know Diane? She was in Astoria for a while.
Yeah, I know the name only because it's
so
unusual.
She and I did Love Letters together way back when. And she's a very fine actress, and she left the area, and now she's moved back to Portland and wanted to do this play so much that she rented a house during the rehearsal period in Seaside.
Lovely.
And brought her cat.
So was she familiar with this play?
Yes, she was.
She was.
Yeah, she had read it.
Okay. I'm wondering because when you introduced, you know, Richard Harris, not the actor, I thought, oh, that's why his name is so familiar because of the actor. But are his productions or his plays well known?
He's kind of a staple in the English theater. Not so much here, but there are a number of his plays that American repertory theaters have done. They're generally small casts, and small casts appeal to people.
Yeah.
This one is four people. And the other, the young woman who has the unenviable task of portraying a recovering invalid, or somebody who's recovering from an automobile accident. She's in a wheelchair part of the time. She's on crutches part of the time. She's hobbling part of the time.
Wow.
And more.
Oh, dear.
Is Priscilla Farrell, who is, she's done a couple.
I saw her recently.
Yeah, she was in Bell, Book, and Candle I directed down at the Coaster Theater.
I liked her a lot.
And that was her first real solid role. And this is her second. I really think she's.
Oh, she's a natural.
Quite talented. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I'm sitting with my mouth hanging. I did not realize that. I thought she was terrific. And considering that you just described how challenging this part is, having to, I know how it is to have to do your body to play a part, but to have to do your body in so many different ways. And it's not something I'm sure, hopefully, didn't come from experience.
Both of these women worked extremely hard. And for some reason or another, people work very hard when I ask them to. And that's part of why I'm successful doing what I do, is because people will go an extra mile if you ask them to.
Well, not if you ask them to, if you, Edward James, ask them to, because I've never directed anything except my life, and that's hard enough, my dog, you know, things like that. But being directed, it makes a huge difference who does the directing. And obviously, they must trust you also. Otherwise, they wouldn't respond to you and work so hard.
That's built up over the rehearsal period, because there are inevitably ways that we disagree and ways that we don't see ourselves. And a director is a mirror. You know, a director is a mirror, among other things. And
interestingly,
and reflects back what they're getting. The other two people in the production, Jordan Griffin, who he did a show for me a couple years ago, The Foreigner, and at Astor Street. And he's been kind of an Astor Street regular for a while. He and some of his numerous siblings have been kind of the foundation of Astor Street.
Okay, that's, again, the name is familiar.
And he wanted to spread his wings a little bit, and he came down and saw a show down there and decided he'd like to perform on that stage. And he's 20 years old, and he's quite terrific in the show. And Catherine Lacaze is the other member, and she plays a counselor, a bereavement counselor, a mental coach for the recovering invalid.
So what does the young man play?
He plays the Daily Mail. He plays the guy who comes around every day, the Daily Mail, as he's called. He comes around and to do the dishes and help out with the garden and maybe do some shopping. He gets paid for that. And he has kind of a crush on her and is kind of socially inept. Mm-hmm. So he provides some of the comedy of the show. There is comedy in the show. And it's a character study about these two women, and you're never quite sure where it's going.
Oh, how good. So that's
and the audience has been very receptive to it, and my own brother liked it, so.
Must be okay. But that's interesting because that's why you don't want to tell too much, because let us be in that position as audience members to not really know what's
The problem is they're a little harder to sell. You know, it's a little harder to sell. But we had pretty good audiences the first two nights, and I expect it'll pick up. The Coaster Theater benefits from the fact that they do sell a good many season tickets, and they have regular theater goers. Not enough people from Astoria venture down there. I don't know why that is. It's a lovely place to go.
Absolutely. Wonderful.
Almost
theater.
Every day I enjoy going down there to work on shows. But
there are also people, of course, more so in the warmer weather, but this weekend is supposed to be a good weekend, so maybe it'll work. Coming in from Portland and other places, second home people as well as visitors who love that there's theater going on in this little town.
Yeah, certainly they get a goodly percentage of their audience from people who come down for the weekend. I'm constantly amazed. During this, I rehearsed one show during the summer, and we couldn't park before 3 o'clock on Sunday, so we scheduled our rehearsals around that.
Wow, how funny!
And they come. I'm every weekend I go down there. There's not like the summer, but. Mm-hmm. People go down there.
Well, it's beautiful, and it's out of the city. So let me ask you, though. You have a huge background in all aspects of theater. And if I want you to tell us about that. I am curious, though. This is a, quote, thriller, unquote. I personally am very impressionable and live out in the woods, and I tend to be careful about seeing scary stuff. Is it something that you...
No, I
don't think this one's going to bother me, because this is more about a relationship.
No, it's not scary.
But what about
way.
Your particular bent? Do you specifically enjoy thrillers, or because of the...
Well, where I did most of my producing and directing before coming to Astoria was in Portland at Sylvia's Class Act Dinner Theater. And we did 12-week runs. So when you do 12-week runs, you can't miss too often. Mm-hmm. You can't there was a symbiotic relationship between the restaurant and the theater, and they depended on us as much as we depended on them. So I mainly did small cast mysteries, comedies, or musicals.
Mm-hmm.
And mysteries are always appealing. I really did just some of the chestnuts, Dial M for Murder. Mm. Death Trap, Wait Until Dark.
Oh, God.
Things like that.
See, that's one of those. I saw the movie.
Well, this one's not as scary as Wait Until Dark, if that'll...
Well, I saw the movie maybe 40 years ago, and I still can remember the refrigerator scene, and it scared the heck out of me.
This isn't really scary. It's more of a...
Well, that's why you said it's psychological.
Yeah. It has its moments. There were people who told me they were scared. So.
Okay. So there should be someone next to you can grab and make sure I always warn people.
Right.
So you mentioned Sylvia's. You were there for quite a while, wasn't it?
13 years.
13 years.
13 years.
But before that, you actually did your university, your master's in playwriting. Now, have you...
At Portland State. I wrote... I adapted one that got... that we did at Sylvia's in the last year that I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And adaptation of School for Wives called The Perfect Fool, and I've written a couple plays, and I've done some other writing, but life kind of just led me in different directions. The reason I majored in have a master's in playwriting was because I thought getting a master's in acting was just too easy.
Uh-huh.
I was acting at the same time.
Right.
And
so did you start acting as soon as you came out of the womb?
No, I was discouraged from being an actor. I was. My parents were looking for a lawyer or a journalist or a politician or
like most
something
parents,
else. You
yes.
know, Astoria many decades ago was a different place than it is now.
As is
the world.
You just gave that piece of information, of course. Where were you born?
I was born in Astoria.
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
That's pretty impressive. For a brief time in my childhood, and then I left here after graduation and came back 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And boy, are we glad you did, because you've gotten into so many things. But you were in New York for a while also.
Yeah.
And while you were in New York, you did some TV stuff. What was that?
I did.
Dr. Ruth, come on.
Actually, New York was, at that time, the center of soap operas. You think of L.A. as being it, but New York had 7 or 8 soap operas, and I made lots of incidental money working on the soaps. Search for Tomorrow, Ryan's Hope.
Well, people who know what you look like are going, they're shaking their head saying, well, duh, of course. Edward is an extremely good-looking man, so, and speaks well.
Particularly on the radio. I'm
there you go, folks. Eat your heart out if you're not near
I
here.
Dr. Ruth was the hardest thing I ever did.
What the heck did you do there?
Well, I went to... people think that the people who appear on Dr. Ruth are real. And I went up there and I read with the producer. The producer handed me a scenario called The Thrill Is Gone. And it was about a man who was a newspaper editor in Westchester whose daughter had gone away to college, and now he was left with his wife, and the thrill was gone.
Oh.
So the way they normally work that would be, you read with the producer, he chooses this guy or this guy, and he chose me. And then normally I met Dr. Ruth at dinner, but she was not feeling well.
Oh.
So normally they would have taped it, but this particular time they said, oh, we're going to have to go on live on Lifetime Network.
Right.
It was on Lifetime Network at the time. And so I'm there in my shiniest, and in comes this
tiny
woman who is 4 foot three.
Oh, come on.
She's tiny.
Yeah, she is.
She is tiny.
She's a powerhouse, though.
And she got into her chair, and underneath her feet was like a 12-inch high block.
Uh-huh,
I mean,
right.
So here's this little munchkin staring across at me. And she was good. She was good. I mean, because she improvised the whole time. She knew what the scenario was. We had two words at dinner. And and she improvised her way through this.
So wait, did you have a specific script, though? I mean, how do you have a script?
Just a scenario. Just
scenario. So you were also improvising.
I was improvising, too.
Wow.
That's something. And she asked me one particularly embarrassing question, and I made my way through it, and it was the greatest thing I've ever done.
I love it.
It had to do with my sexual prowess. And,
I figured.
In more Germanic terms.
Right.
But,
oh, how funny.
It was the hardest thing I've ever done.
Goodness, so. That's pretty
and
amazing.
Then that night or the next day, I had people calling me saying, I thought that all those people were real.
Right.
You know, ex-girlfriends calling and saying.
Yeah, right.
So
they said, didn't
there
sound
is,
like
there
you.
Is a kind of disclaimer on it that is ambiguous.
Well, you know, I haven't lived with a television in, over 50 years. Since I graduated high school and left my parents' house since 1961. So I've never even seen the show, but everybody knows Dr. Ruth.
Yeah.
Doesn't she have an accent also, a European
yes,
accent?
Yes, yeah.
She's a yes. Jewish immigrant from somewhere.
A friend of mine in Portland just did a show, a Dr. Ruth show on a play.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Ruth called her and talked to her.
Okay. Well, I'm thinking that That may be have to be your next project, Edward. Edward James is my guest, and he's here because he is the director of the psychological thriller Dead Guilty. It's playing at the Coaster Theater in Cannon Beach. You can call them right now and get yourself some tickets, 503-436-1242. Or you can go online. That's Coaster Theater with an R-E. It is playing tonight and tomorrow night at 7:30. And this Sunday at 3 p.m. is the only matinee. But the show goes on through February 20th. And you can listen to Edward James do his Kaleidoscope program every Wednesday at 3 p.m. right here on Coast Community Radio. This was an absolute pleasure, Edward.
Well,
this was all surprise information to me, too. I didn't know this, so that was great fun. We'll be listening. We'll see you on the radio.
Yeah.
Okay.
Come and see the show.
Absolutely. Thanks. And I have a piece of music here from Bart Budwig from Enterprise, Oregon. He's going to be playing tonight with friends. That includes Luke Yistie at the Sou'wester. And here's a tune from his brand new album. And this one goes out to my daughter Stephanie and my granddaughter Lena Zahara and Papa Al in Wyoming, which is the name of the piece. Thanks for being here, folks, on KMUN KTCB.
1, 2, 3. Mixing business and pleasure, sleeping around. I think it's about time that I left this town. Now Jack of Diamonds, he left here long time ago, and I can't remember which way he did go. Tell me when do the doggies go? But she don't call a cigarette in the starlight, and I won't feel alone. I've got my doggies and no place to call home. Tell me where do the doggies go? Don't call home. She's mixing business and pleasure and sleeping around. I think it's about time that I left this town.
Okay, and that is Bart Budwig. Again, he's going to be at the Sou'wester Let's see, that's tonight. And Luke Gitzdy is playing with him. And also Brian John Appleby is soloing with them. So it's like two acts there. That's at 8 o'clock. And then on Sunday, looks like all three of them will be at Albatross in Astoria. It must be because they have a full bar or something. I'm not quite sure because it's 3:30 to 6 in the afternoon, but it's a 21 and over gig. Sou'wester is good for everyone. And while I mention the Sou'wester, and I may mention it again, but I just want to let you know, they are having a Chinese New Year's celebration on Saturday from 3 to 4, tea ceremony, and at 5:30, a lantern launch. So it's, boy, there's still a lot going on here, especially during the week. Well, one of the things going on, not this weekend, but actually next weekend, is the Astoria Art Walk. This weekend, Saturday, is the Seaside Art Walk. And usually when there's a Seaside Art Walk, there's also a Gearhart Art Walk, but you'll have to check that because I didn't see it. And again, folks, if you want your events to be announced on the air, not just by me, but by everybody, for me, send it to me, carol@kmun.org. But to get it on the air, go to coastradio.org, click on the events button, write your event in there, just basics, and it will get on the air almost for sure. So that's your best bet these days, and then we can be sure to let folks know what's happening. Well, during the Astoria Art Walk this time, my next guest is going to be sharing her studio, and this is Annie Eskelin. Welcome, Annie.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Oh, I forgot. You're good. Yeah, about like that. I forgot we were chatting so much. I forgot to tell you how to use the mic and stuff.
Is it working?
Yeah, it sounds okay, good. Great. Sounds good. Annie is. We were chatting because when I looked at her bio, I saw that she had been in Eastern Oregon. I'm going to let her tell you about it. But she is one of the Astoria Visual Arts artists in residence. And it seems ABA is on the move. And they had one artist, then they had two. And this time they have three artists. They're including the long ago ABA space, Jamie Boyd's Studio 11. But Annie is going to be in the upstairs space, 1170 Commercial. And her background is quite interesting. And again, we were just talking about this. She's from Soldotna, Alaska. So those of you who live around here or who keep track know that coming up at the end of the month is the Fisher Poets Gathering. And so that's yet another connection to this area. But she also was out in Eastern Oregon as a graduate of the Eastern Oregon University's art program, the student director of the Nightingale Gallery there. This is in La Grande, which the name of it is La Grande, but it's actually sort of feels like a small town, doesn't it?
Oh, yes. It's a big bowl.
Yeah, it's got that feeling. And then she became the executive director of the Art Center at the Old Library in the Union County Art and Culture Center. Were you involved with the whole thing or just the Art Center? Or tell us what that was about. And first of all, I just want to welcome you because this is your first time on KMUN?
Yes, it is.
Have you been on radio before?
A few times.
Okay, but not here. You are a Coast Community Radio virgin.
I am.
Okay, yep. Well, congratulations. So tell us what you were doing in La Grande.
Well, my husband and I were just popping through town, really, and this position came up for the executive director of the Union County Art and Culture Center. And I got it, and it landed us in La Grande for 2.5 years. It's just an amazing job.
So had you gone to school there, though, or did I get
did,
that?
Yes.
You did. But then you left and came back just sort of as a visit? And
Yeah, my husband's sister was graduating. We were just moving through town.
Oh, how fun.
And you know how it's very difficult to find a job in your field.
Yes.
As an artist. And I have an art degree and a business degree, and it's just
perfect.
It was the perfect blend. Yeah. I'm so happy.
Yeah.
Anyway, when I first started, it was the Union County Art and Culture Center, and then it became Art Center at the old library.
Ah,
and then I was there, we merged with Arts East, which was certainly a noteworthy undertaking.
Right. And Arts East is the, among other things, does the artist in education program for, I think it's what, 10 counties? I mean,
yeah.
That entire Eastern Oregon, it's huge. I was fortunate to get to know some of the tiniest towns, including Troy, which only has, well, it doesn't have any people because they worked there, but I had 11 kids in the entire school. They were the children of the workers, but magnificent country. So, well, now you're from Alaska and you married a guy from?
Astoria.
From Astoria.
That is why we were back here.
Oh my God. Yeah. So the Eastern Oregon, but his sister was graduating there.
Yeah.
Wow.
We went to Eastern Oregon University.
But what, your life is very interesting, the way it's kind of comes together.
Yeah, I like to think of it as a spiritual journey, right?
Right.
Moving around.
So what kind of art did you study? Are you practicing? And has it given you more freedom to not be doing? Of course, it's given you a lot less income, but has it given you more freedom to make your own art?
Well, I would consider myself a mixed media artist. Same thing with us moving around. I sort of use materials that are readily available to me. And as sculptor, painting, drawing, those kinds of things. Straight on. Okay. Gotcha.
Good. And so what are you working with now here?
This is a bit of a new thing for me, as I'm basically entirely painting.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a while for me since I've created art. Working in a nonprofit, they really sort of sap all of your creative energy, which is amazing. And I love community-minded endeavors and events. But I wasn't making a lot of art at that time, like, unless it was for a fundraiser.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because you were being the administrator, too.
It was a lot of hours.
Yeah.
So now I'm getting the opportunity to focus on art making, which is really fun. And I'm working on finding my voice. And my application, I said I wanted to experiment and see what was going to happen.
You're perfect.
Fantastic.
This is exactly, in my estimation, what the Artist in Residence program is about, actually, so that you can have the freedom. You have a space with a high ceiling.
Yeah.
So you can work big or work small.
Yeah, and it's a completely different mindset. It lets you take yourself a little bit more serious as an artist, which is it's tricky to do when you're focused on, you know,
life.
Family and trying to get food, those kinds of things. It's a wonderful experience to get to go to the studio every day and take it seriously.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting the way you describe it. It's kind of like going to a job, as opposed to where were you working before you got the residency?
I am a stay-at-home mom.
Mm-hmm.
So I have my little almost year-old son in there with me quite often.
Mm-hmm. That's distracting enough.
It's interesting. Sometimes it is distracting, but he's old enough now he can play on his own.
Oh, good. You're starting him in the finger art or?
He gets into everything, basically.
Right. So what are you doing then? What are you painting? What are you finding that inspires you to paint?
I see it all over the place. It's this area, the coast. It's going in your brain and it's coming out your hands, basically. I started out with a lot of pilings, those kinds of things, just because they're just so majestic. A lot of water. I was talking to Darren Orange, whose studio is right across from mine.
Oh, great.
Also so amazing.
That's
and
lovely.
Robert Paulman is right next to me, so it's just this
good for you.
Sort of awe-inspiring. Yeah.
Both very hard workers as well as wonderful artists.
Unbelievable. So. Just when they open their door, you're like, oh, okay, there's the wow factor.
Yeah.
Lots of trees. Lots of water right now. I'm really working on trying to find my voice and that's just a lot of getting paint on I'm working on panel and seeing what happens. So it's a lot of experimenting.
And the residency started?
January 2nd.
So you've got like 3 months, I think. Is that right?
Yeah.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah.
And did you choose painting or did painting choose you because of what's happening with your life?
I was a studio assistant for an artist, David DeVilliers, over in Le Grand. He taught, I was so fortunate, he taught a term at Eastern University, and we connected, and he's been an amazing inspiration for my art. And he is primarily a painter. He also sculpts. And so I find myself inspired by other artists, basically. Yeah.
But he also sculpts.
Yeah, a little bit. Not too much.
And when you studied in your, I'm going to say in your youth, but you're really still in your youth. So in your younger days.
I'm on the cusp. I'm going on the cusp. I'll be 36 in a week.
Okay. Oh, congratulations. You look 17, but since you're, yeah. I knew you weren't that young because, put you in a high school and you get lost there. So when you were a student, did you make art in Alaska, for example? Was that something that you were focused on already and you came to?
No, actually, not until I met my husband. We've been together, 16 years, something like that, 17. 16.
Was he? Was he
I met him. I met him up in Alaska, sort of a random, occurrence.
Uh-huh.
And then we went to school to EOU together, and he was studying art. And I dabbled for a long time, but I never really thought of it as something to do.
Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't in the radar.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I started taking art classes and then more art classes and then more art classes, and then pretty soon you're majoring in art.
Mm-hmm.
And I also did business as well, just because I think every artist should have that background.
Oh, man. Because artists get sliced to the ground otherwise.
I have the background, and it's still really much of it is about networking. Oh, yeah. Where's that degree in networking?
Yeah. Well, you're in the right place right now because there's this wonderful arts community here, and people are, I think, very supportive of one another rather than competitive. People want to work together and help each other out. So,
it's been an unbelievable experience. I don't know if it's okay if I do a shout out.
Sure.
To the Astoria Coffee House and Bistro.
Oh, yeah.
And Coffee House. They've just gone above and beyond, and Fort George Brewery and the Albatross
in
supporting. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, again.
City Lumber, Dots and Doodles.
Exactly. It's a small town, but I've been here 41 years. It wasn't always like this. And it is now, so that the entire town, including businesses that might not look as though they have anything. Now, Dots and Doodles, of course, they are fantastic, amazing that we have a shop like that in this little town.
It's incredible. You walk in, you're like, this is a small town?
Art supply.
Wow.
Everything in classes and an art loft and everything. But some of those others you mentioned, restaurants or the pub or the lumber shop, people know. And this is, I should mention right now that the Americans for the Arts are doing a survey all over the state, actually all over the country, including the state of Oregon, and some of us are involved in, and we have some surveys. And the idea is to make sure folks do realize how important art is in the economics, so, you know, combining your business and your art kind of thing, in the economic development of an area, and how it's a perfect matchup there to, and it's a good industry to have.
It is a good industry.
In so many ways, besides the economic, it also boosts the values, teaches the children, etc. So,
yeah.
So is your husband still making art?
Yeah, he's a brilliant sculptor. Yeah.
Okay.
I feel really fortunate to have that by my side.
What is his name?
Bill Atwood.
Okay.
He goes by Willem Atwood when he's making art.
Nice. We'll watch for him, too. Annie Eskelin is my guest. She is one of three Astoria Visual Arts artists in residence. The other two are Blaine Verley and from Astoria and Sarah Boma-Lippold. Yes, she is related to Todd, one of our programmers, and each of them has been making art locally, relatively locally, for quite a while. So, Annie, you're the newbie on the, you know, in this group, and it's wonderful to have you.
I'm so delighted
that you and your husband decided to move here.
Thrilled to be here.
Yeah, it's a good place to raise kids, too.
Yeah.
You've noticed.
Yeah.
Well, lots of luck to you, and again, on next Saturday, not this Saturday, but on the 13th, is the Astoria Art Walk. And many of the galleries take part. And now all three of the artists in residence will also open up their studios. Yours is 1170 Commercial, so
Right above the River Sea.
River Sea, so the entrance is right there. And you'll be there?
Yes.
Hopefully you'll get to run downstairs and see some of the other art, too. But
I'll try. Yeah.
But basically, you'll be there for folks to visit with you and meet you. And
yep, 5 to 8.
5 to 8 on Saturday. Thank you so much for coming in, and congratulations for coming to Astoria. How long have you been here? A year?
Since May.
So not even a year?
Not even a year, nope.
Wonderful. Okay, I'm sure we'll see lots more of you.
Thank you, Carol.
Okay. Annie Eskelin. And now I have a piece for you, because in addition to Asian New Year, there is also, that is February 8th, by the way, which is Monday. And of course, that's the lunar calendar. So they all celebrated about the same time. But the very next day is actually the Mardi Gras Day. That's February 9th. So let's hear a piece, Thank You, Joey, from Professor Longhair, right here on Coast Community Radio. More celebrations.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I wanted to do a little reading for you because it is Asian New Year, and I have some really wonderful things here. A Vietnamese-American boy telling the story of Tet, which is the Tet Nguyen Dan, which means the feast of the first day. And everybody's got their own customs, of course, but one of them is for family to come together. Of course, one of them is also to clean your house. I miss that one. So I'm just thinking of the eating bows, those wonderful, that's what they're called in Chinese. I'm not sure what they're called in Vietnamese, but they're, I love the steamed bows with red bean in them. My mouth is starting to water already. But this young man, it's a teenager, writes, there's a special time each year when we celebrate our Vietnamese heritage, Tet Nguyen Dan, which means the feast of the first day. Tet is our most important holiday. We celebrate it for 3 days. I really feel like I'm part of the Vietnamese community in America during Tet. I can experience a little of what my family remembers from their life in Vietnam, see old friends and relatives, and learn more about my heritage. But best of all, I have a lot of fun. The celebration has been greatly influenced by Chinese culture. For nearly 10 centuries, the Chinese ruled in Vietnam, so our religion, philosophy, literature, and customs are much like theirs. Vietnam has its own language, but even now the traditional scholars read and write in Chu Nwa Nyo, a script that looks like the characters in Chinese. And the people use the Chinese calendar, which is based on the moon. So as with the Jewish holidays, Tet falls between January 20th and February 20th each year. Now, with the Muslim holidays, they use strictly the lunar calendar, and so their holidays move throughout the year. But the this one and the Jewish one balance it out. So Tet celebrates the birth of spring and the promise of the future. It's a time for giving and forgiving, paying off debts, forgetting past mistakes and forgiving others, exchanging gifts, presents to teachers and businesses, give New Year's bonuses to employees. Older relatives give special red envelopes to the children, and inside there are lucky coins and sometimes a dollar or two. For the holiday, we like to buy little cakes made of rice called bonsai and bonchung. The recipe comes to us from the very early days of Vietnam's history. And my mother told me a legend that explains why we eat these cakes at the New Year. Many years ago, the people of Vietnam believed the earth was square and covered by a round dome, the sky. Hung Vuong VI was emperor of the land. He had many wives, as was the custom in those days, and many sons and daughters, too. As he grew old and tired, he began to worry about which of his many sons should succeed him. He wanted to choose the one who would rule the land most wisely. Living at the court, his sons had an easy life. They didn't know much about the lives of the common country folk. Finally, the emperor made a good test. He gathered them together and said, "Go out into the countryside. In all of Vietnam, find me a food I have never tasted before, a dish that is both delicious and unusual. 1 year from today, I will choose the next emperor of the land." So they scattered and went to every corner of the country, all except the youngest, Lang Lu. He was a sensitive boy, a good hunter, and also a poet. He enjoyed challenges, but this time he didn't want to leave home. Lang Lu had a nursemaid who had cared for him since his mother had died at his birth. Now she was old and ill. He worried that if he left her, she would die. So each day he tended to her kindly and thought about the emperor's test. One night he dreamed of an old man with a snow-white beard. In his dream, the man said, "In all the earth, there is nothing more precious than rice. Therefore, give the emperor rice. Make it like the heavens and the earth, so that he and all the people will appreciate both. When Lan Lu woke, he could think of nothing but the old man's words. Now, when he wasn't at his nursemaid's bedside, he was in the kitchen, cooking the newly harvested rice, trying to create a dish like the heavens and the earth. Well, all the sons returned during the year, each carrying a new food. Some were spicy, some sweet, with strange new flavors and colorful ingredients. And the emperor tried them all. Finally, he came to the youngest son, came forward with several small cakes on a tray. They were wrapped in banana leaves, some round and the others square. Unwrapping the cakes, the emperor saw that the banana leaves had stained the rice inside a brilliant springtime green. He found a sweet layer of mung beans in the center, the royal color of yellow. The emperor took bite after bite of the delicious concoction. The cakes looked wonderful, but they tasted even better. Where did you find out how to make these wonderful cakes when you didn't travel anywhere? Then Lan Lu told his father about the dream and the words of the old man. He said that the square cakes were like the earth and the round were like the sky. Now the emperor knew which of his sons was meant to be the next ruler of Vietnam. Besides being intelligent and kind, Lan Lu had been lucky enough to get advice from heaven in the form of a dream and had wisely followed it. These qualities made him the best man to rule the land. So Hong Vong the sixth named the square cake Ban Chung and the round cake Ban Dai. And to this day, the Vietnamese people make these cakes on the New Year to give thanks to the earth for its bounty and to the heavens for their blessings. I love folk tales. Well, if I had been a little bit smarter, I would have invited our good friend Lam to come in and actually pronounce things correctly and perhaps tell us about his experience. We'll try to do that another time. But it's a wonderful thing that folks like Annie came to Astoria from Alaska and Eastern Oregon. Well, people come from all over the world, just as our families did, immigrants, and they bring some of their old and they learn new, and people put it together. And it makes for us a great way of life. We should be thankful for it and embrace all of the new. Thanks for being here, folks. It's Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria, KTCB Tillamook. As I mentioned, there's so much going on, and I'm going to put a little music on from Mary Flower, who is one of the things going on. She's a fabulous musician. Again, she's going to be on Crossroads tomorrow from sometime between noon and 2. You can have a listen with Bonnie Lively. And tomorrow night she'll be at the Peninsula Arts Center. Tonight she's at a house concert in Archgate. At the Performing Arts Center, this is the last weekend for Waiting for Godot, and I highly recommend it. Four extraordinary actors. And a young boy who does a great job, too. Coaster, Dead Guilty, Friday and Saturday, 7:30, Sunday at 3. Let's see, the Barn Community Theater has Rumors, Neil Simon, Friday and Saturday at 7. And Bart Budwick and Luke and Brian John Appleby at the Sou'wester tonight, and Albatross on Sunday. Tomorrow, Wings, it's the Wings Conference. Get yourself over if you are a woman looking to get some further education. It's a totally free program, and it's quite amazing. So take advantage of it. And that's 1651 Lexington before 8 a.m. And there's the adult prom that we talked about last week, 9 p.m. on Saturday at the Armory. And also the Astoria Senior Center is offering the play at 1 p.m., the movie at 1 p.m., A Walk in the Woods with Robert Redford and stuff. And Seaside Art Walk and Columbia River Symphony, 10:30 to noon, they are looking for new string players. Sunday, the Liberty has movie, Swinging in the Rain, The Labyrinth Walk, a fabulous celebration of love songs with Deke Weedy, Susan Bueller, and Adam Schwind, and maybe Carrie Lewis in Nehalem, St. Catherine's Episcopal at 2. That's on Sunday. And Hoffman has Doreen Lindstedt and the Fort George, the lowest pair on Sunday.